The Business on RTE Radio 1 with AIB. It takes a certain kind of brave to run a business. We see it, we back it.
Well, now to the very dirty side of trade and money. This week, we've had a number of money laundering operations uncovered by Gardaí and British police. In one of those operations, cars and trucks were seized as part of an investigation into a UK-based international organised crime group that laundered money through the Irish motor trade. Another linked a Belfast mailbox to a Russian money laundering network. Cleaning dirty money is big business, according to our next guest, Geoffrey Robinson, US author of The Laundry Men. Geoffrey, let's start with the practical side of things. If someone has a lot of dirty money from the drugs trade, let's say, or criminal activity, whatever it is, and it's in cash more than likely, how do you get it into a bank when it's huge sums rather than just let it rot away someplace? Or has that ever happened as a matter of interest?
Back in the 80s, Pablo Escobar was riding high with the cartel. He had $40 million in cash hidden in a basement in California, waiting to get into his laundry system. He just couldn't get this money into the system fast enough. It sat in the basement, which was damp and rotted. $40 million in cash rotted because he couldn't get it into the laundry system fast enough.
Now, that's interesting because it seems that to me that there's two ways of doing this. One is where you've got all this illegitimate money and you try to hide it by getting it into the banking system and then you keep it moving around so nobody knows where it came from. But then there's another form, am I right in saying, where you actually have a front, a business that looks like a normal business, and you put the cash through as income or revenue for that business, and then it comes, you even pay tax on it maybe, and it comes out the far side.
It's not two different systems, it's all the same thing. You have to understand the size of the problem. When you're dealing with street cash, $1 million in 100 fresh, brand new $100 bills will weigh about 10 kilos, 22, 23, 24 pounds, and stack 10 feet high. You cannot put $1 million into an attaché case, unlike James Bond's contention. So you're dealing with a huge bulk problem. I mean, after all, if you're selling drugs on the streets of a major world capital in Europe, you're amassing millions and millions and millions of dollars every week. So you've got a bulk problem. You've got to be able to get out of the $5 and $10 and $20 bills that is street cash, reduce the size of that bulk, and do something with it to get rid of it before some of your crooked friends come and knock you over the head and steal it from you. It's a real problem dealing in cash. But once you get out of cash, you can then move it through various systems to bring it out the other end as legitimate looking money. It's not still not legitimate, but it looks legitimate if somebody looks at it.
Now, in order to achieve that, is it necessary to have a crooked banker or a crooked real estate agent, you know, if you put the money into buying a building? Because there are rules and regulations, you know, which say that if I walk into a bank and I want to lodge more than €10,000, the bank is obliged to question me about the origin of that cash. So how do you get, you know, 10 million in cash into a bank or a banking system?
Well, now you've hit on the real key to the whole subject. And they're called gatekeepers. These are the bankers, lawyers, accountants, company formation agents, brokers, real estate people who are the entry into the legitimate financial system. And if you can buy yourself a banker, he'll know how to move the money through his bank and various other banks. Yet crime is a business. It's there's nothing romantic about crime. If you interrupt the cash flow of their business and stop their reinvestment, which means getting to the money and getting to the gatekeepers who are aiding and abetting them in this criminal enterprise, you can put an end to it. But that's not what's being done.
Now, we had recently a case where the Criminal Assets Bureau seized several hundred cars which were attached to a car sales business, and they linked it to criminals in the UK and in Ireland. Not necessarily in that case, but how might someone use a secondhand car sales business to launder money? How does that work?
Well, it's very simple. It's the way you would use any business. You have false invoices and you take in the cash against false invoices. So if you have an old roller sitting on your car lot and somebody wants to launder money, you can say, all right, I'll take 60,000 quid in cash, or 60,000 euros in cash for that old roller. And you go to the bank and you say, well, I just sold that Rolls Royce, so here's the 60,000. Now, there's an easier way of doing it, is to just keep selling the same car over and over and over again and take a check for it. It's very simple when you know how to do it.
Well, when you look at some of the high end, the really bigger cases of money laundering where a bank was involved, you know, has it been the case that the bankers have gone to jail? I mean, are there examples where they should have or they haven't?
They should have, but they haven't. And when the HSBC money laundering scandal broke a few years ago, which was the largest single money laundering case on record, where HSBC was laundering billions of dollars through Mexico. And they I mean, people turned a blind eye. Britain said, oh my goodness, what are we going to do about it? We can't arrest British bankers. It just goes against the grain. So they turned to America, and the United States busted the bank and fined them $1.9 billion. Well, when you fine a bank, it gets written off as the cost of doing business. The problem is, no bankers were arrested. Britain did absolutely nothing because there was too much retirement money invested in HSBC to bust them. Too big to bust. So we don't upset the banks. We don't upset the bankers. We don't upset the lawyers. They're one of us. So you know what? Let's just fine the banks. It's a way of getting money in. And we sort of give the bankers and the lawyers and the accountants a pass. It's disgraceful. But that's why the City of London is the world's largest dirty money sink. It's a toilet of dirty money. And Parliament does nothing about it. They pretend, they fake it, but they won't change it.
Now, when you look at the origins and some of the myths that are there around money laundering, a lot of people think that money laundering began with Al Capone. But that's not necessarily true.
Now, Al Capone had nothing to do with it. The rumor that goes around that makes me absolutely furious is that he laundered his money from whiskey, gambling, prostitution, other crimes, through laundromats. He could say it came from my laundromat. The only problem with that is laundromats weren't invented until three years after Al Capone was dead. There was no such thing as a laundromat. And anyway, Al Capone didn't have to launder money because there were no money laundering laws. Money laundering became a crime in the United States, which was the first country to codify it, in 1987.
When you look at it now, Jeffrey, has the business really changed that much, or are the basic principles the same over all those decades?
Well, the basic principles are the same. What has changed, because international trade has changed considerably. Thanks to the internet, you can be anywhere and buy and sell anything. The bulk of money laundering has become corporate and political corruption, not drug trafficking, and something called trade-based money laundering. And what you do in trade-based money laundering is you take that money and you buy yourself a product, a backhoe loader, an airplane, stereo sets, whatever. And you then move the stereos and the backhoe loader and the airplanes to a jurisdiction where you can sell them and say, well, look, I'm just a guy dealing in
import-export
backhoe loaders. So you're not laundering the cash. You're not moving the cash out of the country. For instance, in England, where trade-based money laundering is huge, you're not moving the money out of the street cash out of Britain or, I presume, Ireland. What you're moving are the products. And you're laundering the products.
Well, it's a fascinating area. Jeffrey Robinson, author of The Laundry Men, thank you very much for joining us.
My pleasure. Anytime.